Welcome everyone to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Ask the Expert session. Today's topic is WebSphere Commerce Search. My name is David Long, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. If you are unable to access the e-meeting at this time, please go to the WebSphere Technical Exchange site and click on today's presentation title. The document that displays will contain the PDF file. You can also find the link to the PDF file by visiting the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site on Twitter by going to www.twitter.com/IBMWSTE. Moving on to slide two. In today's session, we will start off by introducing our panel experts to you. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to WebSphere Commerce Search. Next, our panel experts will answer questions that were pre-submitted to us through email. Then we will open the lines for a live question and answer period. Finally, the session will end with a summary of today's session. On slide number three, at this time, I would like the panel experts to introduce themselves for today's call. Daniel Dunn is a search subject matter expert for WebSphere Commerce. Please go ahead, Daniel.
My name is Daniel Dunn, and as David said, I'm the subject matter expert for Commerce Search. I'm from the product development team in Canada, Toronto.
Thank you, Daniel. Next, we have Brendan Bela, WebSphere Commerce Client Technical Resolution Specialist. Please go ahead, Brendan.
Hello, I'm Brendan Bela. I'm on the support team for Commerce Support, and I've been kind of heading handling all of the PMRs that have been incoming for Solar. So I guess I'm the L2 SME. I've written a red book on Solar Search, and I've also delivered in the past a previous WSTE about troubleshooting common questions.
Thank you, Brendan. Then we have Conway Chang, WebSphere Commerce Client Technical Resolution Specialist. Please go ahead, Conway.
Thanks, David. My name is Conway Chang, and I'm also on the Level 2 WebSphere Commerce support team. One of my specialties is the catalog and Solar Search. I also did the previous WSTE troubleshooting session with Brendan, and I am one of the I'm also one of the support specialists for Solar. Thank you.
Thank you, Conway. Next, we have Adrian Bajnov, WebSphere Commerce Developer. Please go ahead, Adrian.
Thanks, David. As David said, my name is Adrian Bajnov. I'm a developer on the search team here in Toronto, working with Daniel and Stan. And been in commerce for about 9 years now, and also been developing on the teams of catalog content and data load and workspaces. Thanks.
Thank you, Adrian. And finally, we have Stan Blackman, WebSphere Commerce Developer. Please go ahead, Stan.
Hi, my name is Stan Blackman, and I'm a WebSphere Commerce Developer on the search team. I've been, over the last couple of releases, I've been focusing on the search-based merchandising rules and facet management. Thank you.
Thank you, Stan. Before we get to the question and answer period, our panel would like to give you a technical overview of the topic. Moving on to slide number four, please go ahead, Brendan.
So, since Solar WebSphere Commerce Search was introduced in Feature Pack 2, we've gotten a whole lot of interest on it from a lot of customers. We thought this would be a good chance for you know, anyone who has any questions about Solar to answer them. Ask them and, you know, have all of our customers listen in on them. We generally get questions in three different flavors or subjects. So deployment configuration, index building, that's when you're actually, you know, setting up your index, and then index querying, so that's more when you're on the storefront and you're submitting searches or you're navigating through the actual queries that go over to Solar. We also thought this would be a good chance to talk about Feature Pack 5. Feature Pack 5 was introduced a couple of weeks ago, and it has a lot of changes and updates to Solar. So we've been getting a lot of interest in that as well. So it would be a good chance for any questions that you have. If you're thinking about moving to Future Pack 5 or even thinking about, you know, getting search on your environment, now would be a good chance to address any concerns you have. So we can go to the next slide, slide 5. Okay, so we had some questions that were pre-submitted. We're just going to go through them and answer them before we open up the line for questions. So question 1, I noticed stemming doesn't work 100% of the time in searches. Books stems properly to book, for example, but houses stems into house, H-O-U-S. What are the implications of this? How can I fix this? Slide 6. So this isn't actually a problem. The way stemming works is, so a customer might see this if they're doing debug query on the Solr side and they're looking at searches and they're submitting terms and then they're seeing what the actual term looks like when it's sent to Solr. So they might get concerned that the words that they're entering aren't exactly the words, you know, for example, that house example, H-O-U-S. But actually it's not a problem as long as the word that you end up searching on is the same as the word that ends up being stored in the index. So what's happening is something called stemming, where we take the plural of the word and we drop the S, or we drop basically the plural. The stemming that we use is algorithm-based, so it doesn't quite match up with the language. So, for example, we don't know that the singular of houses is house, so we drop the ES instead. But because we drop the ES both during the query and during index building, it ends up searching for the same thing that's stored in the index, and you're going to get an index match. So as long as everything matches up on the search compared to what's stored in the index, it should be fine. Not all words stem. Like I mentioned, stemming is algorithm-based. So I've only come across one example of the algorithm that we use for stemming that didn't work. So the customer in this scenario sells clothing on their store. They were selling bras. So they had products in their store that were bras, and the product would be bra 1234, whatever. So if a customer were to search on the storefront, they would search for bras, plural. The stemmer, for whatever reason, the algorithm that that's used, it didn't realize that bras, B-R-A-S, was plural, so it wouldn't drop the S, so it wouldn't find any matches for the singular. It wouldn't find bra when you search for bras. So for scenarios like that, and like I say, it's very rare. That's the only word I've come across that doesn't stem properly, but it's likely that there's others. It's just that's the only one we've ever encountered. We recommend creating and maintaining a synonym list. So what you can do, we have statistics gathering in search where you can take a look at the top search hits and top search misses, and basically it gathers statistics every day. And if you look at those statistics and see, oh, okay, you know, bras isn't finding our bra products, we recommend creating a synonym, and you can do that just through our management center tooling, where basically you associate bras with bra. And then the match is going to happen, because when a customer searches for bras, the way our synonyms work, it's also going to search for bra, and then you're going to have a match. Page 7. So the stemmer that we use, it's a Solr stemmer. It's Snowball. There's also a couple of other stemmers that are available in Solr. So I have them here, Hunspell and KStem. If for whatever reason you're not happy with the Snowball stemmer, you can switch the index to be using these other stemmers. And I have a link here where basically you can take a look at the different stemmers available in Solr. Slide 8.
Okay, thanks, Brendan. Question 2. This is Adrian. So I'm just going to read up the question. Customers on my site can search by part number, for example, MX420-35R. If I were to search for MX42 only, it would not find anything. How can I make a partial search match? So in commerce, when we define our search schema, our Solr schema, we decided at the time, well, thank you for changing the slide, we decided at the time to make part number a non-tokenized column. What this means is during indexing, when we read the data in from the commerce database, it does not generate a bunch of partial tokens so we can get a search hit based on subsets of the string. So if you want to achieve this, you can change that column to be a different column type. What we recommend is using the word delimiter factory, filter factory. We have a type that we built, our own commerce type. When you look inside of the Solr schema file, you see there's a bunch of known types that are that come as part of Solr, as an example. And we also created our own extension types to support some of the common use cases. So one of our WC text sites, unfortunately I can't show it to you right now, one of our types is WC text, and it uses the word delimiter factory, which by default splits up tokens by alphanumeric. So if the string encounters any other string that is not an alphanumeric character, it will split on that and generate a token. So that will help in this case to find that part number, that example. An alternative to use that, which is a little bit more expensive, is the edge-and-gram filter factory. The edge-and-gram filter factory, what it does is it creates explicit tokens based on the string itself. So if you have the word, if you go to the Solr website, you can see an example of Nigerian. And it splits up Nigerian into as many tokens as possible. So it starts from N, and it goes N-I, N-I-G, N-E-R, all the way. You can configure it to how many tokens you want it to generate. So that's another alternative. And as the slide says, they're all configured inside the schema.xml file in Solr. That's pretty much it for that answer.
All right, question number three. This is Conway. This question is about Solr caching. Is any caching used on the Solr servers? And how can I monitor and configure the contents of the Solr cache? Page 11, please. The Solr does cache particular views of the index that do not change. But it's only the views that do not change. So it's totally dependent on what data is indexed. And then you can find detailed Solr cache statistics, like lookups and hits and cache size, via the Solr administrative interface. We have a document in our info center that's listed there that has, it's actually a performance tuning document, some hints and tips. And if you go to that page, you'll find some links to the Solr documentation as far as how to download the application, and then also we give you steps on how to deploy the admin interface to your Solr environment. All right. Next question is on slide 12.
This is Daniel Dunn, and I'll be handling question number four. I want to take advantage of a new feature in Solr version 4. Can I upgrade my Solr ear? Next slide, please. And the answer is you can download the latest version of Solr from Apache, but unfortunately the product will not support this configuration since this is not properly tested with the product at the time when it was released. So just a bit of background, Featureback 2, from Featureback 2 in version 7 of Commerce all the way to Featureback 4, it was shipped with Solr 1.4. And in the most recently announced Featureback 5, it came with Solr version 3.5. Now, even though the version cannot be upgraded, there are peripherals that you can download that is regarded to that Solr version, say for example 1.4 or 3.5. So an example of that would be a Tika parser. So if there's a Tika parser that you require to parse a document that is not being shipped, that the format of that parser is not being shipped with the product, you can definitely download that and install it and work with the product. But not the upgrading the runtime version of Solr or Lucene underneath. Okay, next slide, please.
Hi, this is Stan Blackman, question number 5. I want to limit the number of attribute facets in the search result. What's the best way to do this? Before Feature Pack 5, we would typically mark attributes searchable when we want them to be able to search by the values of these attributes, and they will automatically become facetable as well. And that would mean that all the attributes that are searchable will also show up as facets in your navigation flow, and they will also show as facets when you are reviewing your search result. Now, in Feature Pack 5, we've separated the concepts of searchable and facetable. Here, you're looking at the user UI for configuring an attribute dictionary attribute, and there is a separate configuration for the facetable flag. So you can see it in the middle of the screen. It's checked right now for the swatch color. We configure it as being facetable. We also have a separate control over whether you want this attribute to appear as a facet as part of the search result. So if the checkbox that's surrounded by the red rectangle is not checked, then you will not see color in your search result, but you will still see it during navigation.
So that's all the questions that we have that were pre-submitted. Move on to slide 16. We can open the line for questions.
Thank you.
To our panel experts for answering their pre-submitted questions. At this point, Rico, we would like to open the lines for a live question and answer period.
And we do have a question joining. One moment. And our first question comes from Batsar Batasheria. Your line is open.
So we actually have products and items in our catalog. And the client actually wants that if we search with the item part number, the product should be returned. Is that configurable or possible with the Web3 Commerce search?
Well, this is Daniel. I can take this question. So an ideal part number would be alphanumeric, I would imagine. And so in your case, the search will happen from the storefront, I imagine. This is done by the shopper. And then for the ideal part number, then everything goes well, and then it lands on the product display page as you would expect. Now, if there are any other special characters that being mixed into the part number, then the whole string will be treated as an invalid string by the runtime, mainly because the some of the characters that the shopper enters are being listed in the protected list in one of our configuration files. So I think the short answer to your question is having special characters in a part number will actually end up being an invalid search request.
Okay, so in that case, you're saying that it cannot be done, right, Daniel?
It cannot be done? What do you mean by it cannot be done?
So this is actually not about the special characters also. This is about, like, I want to search for an item part number, and I want to return the product in the search grid, actually. So is that possible? We can actually take care of the special characters, whatever you said,
Sorry to interrupt you. The easiest way to do that is to flatten out some of the data at index time. So what we did for the support attribute search is we flattened out some of the SKU attribute values up to the product level when it got indexed, so we always get a search hit. Now, we didn't do that for everything on the SKU. Maybe we should have. But it's possible if you do this, follow a similar type of strategy. You just have to index the SKU information. So when you do the pre-processing, you have to extend the pre-processing that's happening and flatten out that data to be loaded into the product itself.
So it will be another descriptive attribute which will be like separated by semicolons for all the different part numbers. And then it will be actually
an attribute. You can use the same part number. You can flatten out any part of the SKU and load it into the product, right? You have that flexibility with indexing.
Okay.
You understand what I mean?
Yep, I got it.
Yeah. Yeah, you can see an example of that with the attribute queries that we've done, of how to efficiently fetch the information from the child SKUs and pull it into the parent product. You may need to make the part number multi-valued, so you may need to add another column. And depending whether you want to do partial matching on the part number, you may want to make the part number column tokenized.
Okay, I got it.
And our next question comes from the line of Irina Teskevich. Your line is open, ma'am.
Hi, I had a question about the content search. So I know right now it reads files from the manifest.txt file. Is there a way to just pass in a directory of file listings and index those content files instead? Or are we heavily dependent on the manifest.txt file?
This is Daniel. So you can make use of a crawler to crawl the directory if your web server allows it. But if your web server doesn't allow it, then the manifest file is the only place that you can define a directory for the parser to parse your web content files.
So with that build index command, is there a way to pass in a directory right now and just build index based off that directory?
So like in the wcdataconfig.xml, right now we're passing in the manifest.txt file. And basically, instead of that, and inside the manifest.txt file, if I remember correctly, it has a list of different content, so like PDFs and things like that. And instead of that, reading from the manifest.txt file, you want to be able to pass in a directory, and then basically in that directory would be the web content, so PDF files and whatever other kind of content you have. Is that what would be in the directory?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so I know for data import for the wcdataconfig.xml, you can read from a directory, or you can specify, I believe, a directory, and then basically read the files in the directory. We don't do that out of the box.
Yeah,
but
we don't do it in the preprocessor in DIH. So maybe we'll take it back and then get back to, was it Irina? Okay, so...
Yeah.
So at this point, we don't have an answer for Irina, so maybe let's get back to her at a later time.
Yeah, there's an email address that we're going to have at the end where basically you can submit the questions, and if you resubmit this question, David's going to send that to us, and we can look a bit more into, you know, the options that Solr has and how you can do this, and we can get back to you with a more detailed answer of how you can set this up.
Okay, great. Thanks.
And at this time, we have no other questions in the queue.
Okay, thank you, Rico. We do have a couple of questions in the group chat. And the first one is, when you say Edge and Gram is more expensive, is that on indexing, searching, or both?
I tried to answer. So, I think when I said that, I meant you may be generating more tokens than expected when using the word delimiter factory as an alternative in that example. Nicola is asking me, when is it more expensive? I think it's probably more expensive to do it during the analysis time, so it's probably cheaper to do it during the indexing time.
Yeah, in the schema.xml, when you're setting up your tokenizers, there's two sections. There's one where you can pass in tokenizers during index building, and then there's the other section where basically you tokenize the search terms. So you're tokenizing whatever the customer is searching for. If you want to use Edge Ngram Filter Factory, it's probably you would probably only need to pass it in during the index building part, because basically whatever the customer is searching for, that should match up with one of the tokens in the index. So you don't need to tokenize the term that you're searching for, because that's just unnecessary. Then you're going to have, you know, instead of one term matching with one of the tokens in the index, is going to be all of these terms that you've tokenized. So for example, for the Nigerian example, if you're searching for Nigerian, you don't want to search for N and then NI and then NIG and then NIGE. You just want to search for Nigerian and then hope that it's going to match one of the tokens in the end. So a lot of the times, if you take a look at the schema.xml, you'll see a lot of the tokenizers, a lot of the filters are going to be in both the indexing part and the querying part. However, it's not always the case. And for example, in our out-of-the-box one, in our word delimiter filter factory, Some of the flags that we have set up, you'll see they're set to true in the index part, and they're set to false in the query part, and that's because it's just unnecessary, and that's going to save you time during searching.
Okay, thank you. The next question from the group chat is, can you describe volatile data index design?
That I have sent Tom a note, so we will have a separate discussion offline.
Okay. And the next question from Ian Tuck. In toolkit environment, is there a cached new instance of Solar Index created as have to restart after updating the index? How can restart be avoided?
So there is another option that you can configure the toolkit to use. Instead of using a Cloudscape as the database, you can use either DB2 or Oracle as your remote database tier. So in this case, once the toolkit has switched over to either an enterprise database server, then every time when you do index, the index reader is able to refresh itself, and there's no restart is needed. The main restriction with Cloudscape is that there's only one connection from the data source, per JVM. So this is the reason why the server needs to be restarted in order to refresh the latest information.
So if you switch to DB2?
Yeah, switch to DB2 and Oracle, then there's no restart needed.
Okay.
Thank you. The next question from the group chat is, how does Solar leverage Attribute Dictionary?
I can answer this one, Adrian. So in feature pack 3 and 2, we had the option to, as you're creating a new attribute and introducing it into the dictionary, you can mark it as searchable. And searchable implied that any product that got associated with this attribute would get hit in the search results, and it would also show up as a facet. Now, in Feature Pack 5, we've enhanced the tooling a bit more around Attribute Dictionary to separate out these two concepts. I think Stan showed it earlier in one of his screenshots. Now you can mark an attribute explicitly as facetable and explicitly as searchable. So to separate those two different purposes out, you can apply those attributes to products. And we also have another UI to manage the facets themselves at the category level. So you can just turn off the display and the ordering of how the facets show up when you're browsing the category. So you can turn these attributes into facets, and you can turn them off at different category levels in Feature Pack 5.
Thank you. We have a couple more questions that have shown up in the group chat. The next one is for product sequencing within the subcategories managed with MC. Will there be any support in Solar for this functionality, and how will this work for products residing at all levels of category hierarchy?
So I think I know what you're asking about, Kunal. I think I'll try describing it, and then in the group chat you can, you know, confirm that this is what you're asking. But okay, so let's say that you have a category or a category hierarchy where you have category A, and then let's say category B and C are subcategories of category A. So if you're in category B, for the products inside category B, you can see the sequencing that you set up in Management Center is adhered to when you're viewing the products in category B. However, and the same is true for category C. Once you go into category A, so when you're viewing category A, you can see both the products in category B and in category C. However, you notice that the sequencing that you set up in Management Center isn't adhered to, and it seems to be somewhat random. Is that the scenario you're describing, Kunal? Okay, great. So I've had a couple of PMRs on this recently, and we've done some investigation, and we found that basically what's happening is the way we handle sequencing is we have this function that we pass into Solar, where we pass in the category and the catalog, and basically we tell Solar, okay, here's these two values now with the cat entries that are returned from the Solar result, sort them based off of the sequencing value in the cat entry in the fields for the CAD entries. When you're viewing in CAD group A, they're actually... Okay, so let's say CAD group B has a product, XYZ. In the product XYZ, in the document that Solar has for product XYZ, in the sequence field, we have a value, a sequence value, that is associated to CAD group B. It is not associated to CAD group A. So when we're trying to view that product in CAD group A, we do not see that sequence value because we're saying, okay, give me the sequence value that's associated to CAD group A. And that doesn't exist as we set it up during pre-process and build index. That doesn't exist. So what you can do is add these values through some customization, through some custom logic, in order to make whatever sequence value you want. And I believe that the reason that we don't do this is because I've heard a couple of different requirements from customers. For example, one customer wanted sequencing, let's say you're in CAT group A, and they wanted the sequence values of CAT group B adhered to. So they want all the products shown in CAT group B, and then they want all the products shown in CAT group C, and then they want the sequencing adhered to. Other customers want all of the sequencing, so they want a mix-up of CAT group B and C. So because there's these different requirements from customers, I think that we just kind of leave it up to you in order to create these sequence values as you see fit. Daniel, you want to say
I wanted to add a little bit more on what Brandon just said regarding the sequencing for products under subcategories. Because the nature of the search done at a higher-level category is really a deep search. So, and the rank is associated with each product at a leaf category level. So when you try to do a deep search on all these subcategories, these rank for all the search hits doesn't really make much sense. Now, if you really want to sort them in a particular sequence, given that you know which category needs to go first, then you can potentially come up with a rank numbering scheme across maybe a department and all the categories underneath it, so that when you flatten all these products, the rank still makes sense. Not only does it make sense within a category, it still makes sense across the entire department. So I can give you an example using that ABC category. Perhaps products under the top-level category, you give it a very large number so that they all show up first. And then for the subcategory B and C, they will end up being, let's say, all the products under B will precede C. Then you put a prefix to all the products in B larger than all the products in C. So I think you get the idea, right? So it depends on the scope. Right now, I think the starter store that we ship only scopes to a current category. But if you're doing a deep search that involves more than one category, then the number needs to be considered when you rank them across multiple categories. So I think that's probably the quick and easy way to do it without a lot of customization. I hope I answer your question.
Yeah. The good thing for that, so we're just suggesting to change the index. You don't need to change the function because the way the function works, it's going to pass in CAT group A if you're in CAT group A. So basically, you just need to make a sequence value associated to CAT group A for all of the entries, and then that's going to work. So the only thing that you end up needing to change is the data in the index, and you don't need to mess around with the function that we have.
Okay, thank you. The next question from the group chat, does IBM Solar support indexing of unstructured content attachment in the latest feature packs?
The answer is yes. It still support so all the existing function in feature pack 2, 3, and 4 will get carried forward into later feature packs. So support for unstructured content has been around since feature pack 2, 3. So in feature pack 5, that feature is still available. And we have also upgraded the Tita version as well, just so you know.
Thank you. The next question, our category pages are driven by Solr, but they do not seem to follow the sequencing of the categories. How can we make that work?
Yeah, I think that's a question that we answered from Kunal.
Yeah. Yep.
One thing I can mention in Feature Pack 5, if you're finding that you don't like the behavior of the category, the deep search flow, Feature Pack 5, we shipped a new search sample store, and it's using the more traditional category navigation in the store. That will work out of the box with the sequencing.
So you can toggle between deep and
you
shallow.
You can toggle between. This is an example of how to toggle between deep and shallow if they want to switch it.
Okay.
In Feature Pack 5 in that store.
Thank you. And another question: is pricing one of the item attributes that is rolled up to the product level for faceting purposes? For example, if you are returning products, are item prices of the products facetable OOTB?
So let me answer yes, let me elaborate this a little bit. So currently, if there are multiple prices underneath a given product, in the search result will show a range along with the product. And the facet that comes with that page on the left side actually account for all the underlying products. Or underlying SKUs that comes with the product. So in this case, you get the range right underneath the product in the search result, and the price facet should account for all the underlying SKUs.
Okay, thank you. We've got two more. Well, they're still coming in. The next question, for my client, there is regular catalog data indexed, and also unstructured content indexed. When searching, there are two Solr queries fired at the back end. One is to get normal catalog data and other for unstructured data. My question, is there a way to control the unstructured content query? For example, I don't want unstructured content results to display all the time. So is there a way to control the unstructured Solr query that is fired at the back end in order to improve performance?
This can be done in the UI. If I understand this correctly, the search are being done as two separate service requests from the GSP in the UI. In other words, from the storefront. So I think the customization here is simply just perform the product, the catalog search, and then take away the unstructured content search from the search result. Page on the GSP. So it's a very simple customization done on the GSP.
Thank you. Next question is, top nav doesn't appear. This is a new environment setup when we use category recommendations for top nav. However, the same categories appear just fine when hit directly using category display URL. What could be the likely cause?
We're not too sure what could cause that right now. We probably need some more information. It sounds like maybe something didn't get indexed properly. The top nav meaning the menu bar, not the auto suggest or anything like that, right? Oh, I guess we can't hear the.
So that sounds it's a recommendation. So it's basically an e-spot, probably.
E-spot.
Right.
He's responded right, top nav, sub nav, etc.
I think we need more information on this.
I think the best way to attack this is probably open a PMR so we can get some more details about the problem.
Okay, thank you. Next question. When we build the search expression builder from storefront page, is there a way to specify specific filter factory to use, or do we have to specify only in solrconfig.xml?
So filter factory is probably the filters that are set up in the schema.xml. Okay, so when it says solrconfig.xml, that's probably the schema.xml that you mean, Andy. And then the way that this could be controlled, thinking about it, basically you would need a couple of different search profiles, and these two search profiles if you want to use one filter factory or another, basically search profile A, let's say, would search field A, and field A would be tokenized by your first filter factory. And then you would have a second search profile that would search against field B, so this other field that's set up to use different field or filter factories.
And just to add to that, there are two filter factories for each data type. One is at index time, the other one is at runtime. So just to be aware that the information could be stored differently if you're using a different filter for indexing.
Thank you. There doesn't appear to be any more questions.
Looks like there's...
just got one more question.
Yeah, one more question.
Just came in. On a solar index failure exception on the server environment, what is the expected behavior? Should the indexing roll back, making no changes in solar, or will it update the changes otherwise?
Yeah, I can take this. There are two parts of the indexing. One is pre-processing, which doesn't touch solar. And if that fails, then there's no impact to the runtime environment or the storefront. Now, the second part, when once the pre-processing is done, flattening data, when that data is being loaded into Solr, it's actually being loaded into a separate index, a work-in-progress copy in the background. So the one that is live is still up and running while Solr is indexing the new data. And once that indexing is done, Solr is smart enough to hot swap the copy that is live, right? So what it does underneath is it swaps the index reader over to the new directory segment and start using that new copy and throw away the old one. So that's apparently how it works inside of Solr and Lucene. So I think the short answer is if the second part fails, then Solr just throws away that work in progress copy, and not, it will not impact the storefront. So all you need to do is just restart the indexing, start over again.
Okay, thank you. I'm not seeing any more questions, and I'd like to thank everyone for your participation in a live question and answer period. Thank you for your questions. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject of WSTE subscribe to get a list of mailing lists and to subscribe. Also, if there is a topic that you would like to see scheduled or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please feel free to let us know as well. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program even better for you. We do welcome any ideas that you may have. Thanks again for your participation. At this time, I would like to advance to slide 18 and pass the presentation to Brendan Bailaw for a summary of today's session.
Yeah, so once again, thanks everybody for joining, and thanks for all your questions. Summary-wise, we just answered some questions. We hope that we answered all the questions you had. For Irina, the one question that we weren't able to answer the previous slide, if you submit your question to that email address, David's going to forward it to us, and then we can provide you with a more thorough answer. Yeah, so thanks for joining, and we hope you learned a lot.
Thanks, Brendan, for the great summary. At this time, we will conclude the Ask the Expert session. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation, and we hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Thanks very much for joining us today, and a sincere thank you to our panel of experts for presenting today.